Probably the best thing to do is we just kind of go through the history of how this
I can't remember the
Well, these were brought from Lipsley, this much.
I would say it must have been about 1930 or
1931. Mm-hmm. I'm not positive of
that. And they brought the elk from, these are from Lipsley? They're from Lipsley, Peninsula, yeah. Old Ignorolson called them. Lake Quinnum. He was taking wild animals, and they caught him when they were little calves, and he kept them for a while. I guess they bottle nursed them until they got them, so they would, and then they shipped them up. There was eight of them, five cows and three bulls, and they shipped them up to this, I don't remember his name, but the government had this little experimental station. Well, it was out of Kodiak, or 10, 12 miles, I guess. About an hour with that old boat of ours, which didn't go very fast. Or more. I think it was a little more than that. And he had a setup there to experiment with cattle, see how they do on the island so the natives could. And cattle did real good, and grass did everything, so that's. They wished these little elk on him to take care of. And it was all right for a few months. And I know I was talking with the elderly gentleman. They give him a bad time. He was in there cleaning out the manger once, and those bulls all got behind him and started tromping him on the back with their hoofs. And then they'd run his cattle there up on the mountain, and he complained so much that they decided they'd have to move him. So they decided they'd put him on another island and make the fog act, and because we were the other government agency there, it was wished onto the hatchery to arrange for the moving. He didn't have any boat there. They selected me and to go over with Jim Chernoff to move these critters. Well, I didn't know anything about moving elk. And we took the scow and went over there and figured we'd just load them up and take them back. And put this old scow up on the beach. We didn't want to wait a long time, so we just put a ramp down like we did for loading the cat, ramp over the stern and back in down inside. And the old guy that ran the farm there, he was used to him, so he had a bucket of feed. You'd get those elk up on the ramp to go in, but then it would shift a little, current shift the bow a little, and it'd move a little, and they'd jump off.
That would be photo number one then.
That's
number
this
two.
Just getting them in, got the deck down. He was just getting them acquainted to the boat. And I'd tied that any number of times, and all was the same thing. So then I got the bright idea of putting this rope on one of the bulls. I figured. Figured if I could get a rope on him, I'd let one inside. Well, then they'd all come, but as soon as you'd go up and put your arm around him, but as soon as you put the rope around his neck, the elk took off. He had it tied around his neck, but I didn't have no hitch on his nose yet. So I could no more hold him enough, and if I let him go, he went right out into the bay. And the old man got a hold of him later and got the rope off. So we'd seen that was no good, so we went back to Kodiak. Got some lumber and material, put the thing up, scalp on high tide, and let it go dry, and put the ramp down, and then they walked right in, no problem at all. Then floated it off on the next high tide, and towed them over to Fognack and released them on that one.
Photo number three.
No problem getting them off, because they walked right on. They were at the time, I guess they were a little over here and they had spikes. Mm-hmm. I don't know just the time we moved them. Yeah. had waged fat and sassy there on a Sunday. Cows the following year all had calves. One cow swam over to Whale Island when she was with calf. Why, I don't know, across the street there. Dr. Parker, that was running Whale Island, had a fox farm. He told me about it later that this cow had a calf.
Did she stay there with the calf? Or?
Did as long as I was there. Now, I don't know what happened. Maybe whether they decided to help me taste good and they eat them off or what happened to them. I wouldn't know. No.
Yeah, see, you know, the photo is, you know, number six. That's a cow and one of the calves.
Yeah, that was the following spring. One bull come up to the hatchery and caused all the women in camp a bad time. He delighted in going down through the clotheslines when they'd hang clothes out and catch all the clothes on his horns and run away with them. To any ladder leaning against the building, he knocked it down. We had to get a little rough with him to take him out of there, because he was causing too much disturbance.
Well, see, after they were on Fogneck Island, then there's probably no hunter pressure on them at all for 5 years.
No, not unless they were poking. I don't think there was up to the time I left, because, yeah, I'd see the herd every year, and it was about normal for injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Later now, when they got more of them, I imagine the natives did when they got hungry, probably still one. I wouldn't. Apparently, they were treacherous. But there was always lots of grass and lots of deer around.
Well, now, see, now, the fish hatchery had what kind of facilities on Fogneck Island? Do you have any kind of stuff there at all at that time?
Lifetime?
Yeah, no, as far as your buildings and stuff. You know, was that was where you had your
that's the hatchery.
That's where you had the main hatchery was on Fogneck.
Yeah, egg taking station Kodiak on the far river.
Well, then this, the picture of the hatchery here is pretty much what it looked like at that time then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you said that you cut all this lumber was cut right there.
Sawmill was in part of the one end of the hatchery. There was kind of an end down in the museum. And they had a boom.
So it's actually stuck right onto the building.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. We had
Well, it's like you made some pretty fancy cuts there. It looks like you were making tongue and groove stuff and everything.
Oh, yeah, you could. They had the edger planers and all the cut off the lot.
What kind of wood was that most of your cut? Spruce?
We just, it was pretty choosy, and it was all pretty clear lumber. We just go around and pick out.
Nice.
That was part of it that wouldn't make lumber, while we use the fuel, because we use it. That's the only fuel we had there was wood that we used at that time. The cook had the oil burner for his range, but all the heat was wood.
Well, how many families were there at the hatchery at that time then?
There was usually about eight married couples. How he houses, and then they had a bunk out for the single bunk and the stars.
Now you told a story about getting the dog getting you in trouble with the elk. Maybe you could tell that one again.
I think they'd had their second crop of calves. Yeah, I know they had. There was a small bank on them. And I was taking care of a little dog, the guy that was a prospect that worked for us in summertime. He went out to Seattle and he wanted me to take care of his dog. He was a good retriever, so I didn't mind taking care of him. It's a mongrel dog that he was water dump. And so he went with me and went down with somebody to do a little duck hunt along the creek. A little exercise. He got down there 2 or 3 miles along the creek. The dog had worked good. All of a sudden, I seen these elk off in the distance, and the dog is in him. He goes over and snoops around him, and the elk all start taking after him. He runs over to me, gets between my legs, and they all congregated with a circle around me. It made me a little nervous because there's no trees, there were no trees there. I couldn't get up a tree. And they kept making that circle smaller. And I tried to chase the dog away, but he wouldn't go. He just hang right between my legs and hollered and everything else and did no good. And shot a few shots over their head with the old overbarrel. I think they had me cornered there for about an hour. I was a little sweaty. But they finally decided that they'd leave. They got tired of it or something. I'm glad to see them go.
So they're pretty big critters. I can understand why they kind of shake you up a little bit.
Some of the older bulls, yeah, wearing the horns at that time. If they wasn't the horns, they tromp with their feet. They were worrying me more than their horns.
Well, there's one picture of this year-old cow here with her calf. She looks like she's pretty good size. Apparently, the feed was good on her.
Oh, yeah. They were always fat all the time. That's a winter orphan.
Mineral Ron says they're taking quite a few of those up there now.
Oh, I guess so. In fact, this is a fairly good herd, as I understand. Yeah. I know my brother sent me a Alaska magazine once quite a few years ago now. I'm not forgetting now. Then there was quite a herd. Yeah, apparently, I haven't said how many. Originally, there was only 8 put on there.
Well, I guess the from the pictures I've seen that Ron showed me, they still got the place marked where the old hatchery was.
It all disappeared?
I guess it has. In fact, he's got maps, and there's a couple places that they have Hatchery Cove and other things marked on there, and Egg Taking Creek or something like that.
No true names. They're all different.
Well, you have to bring that map in and show you. It's pretty good. Well, how many? You were there from about what?
1927 to 1932.
And they kept the hatchery in operation for about how long after that?
It closed in 1933. I never went back because they knew I was out on leave, and that was during the Depression, and finances for the government were kind of lean, and they had to cut down, so they figured they could close those Alaska stations with less tolerance and sportsmen than they could the ones in the States.
Yeah.
So both Alaska hatcheries, the other one, a gas bay, was closed at the same time. So it would have been in 1933 they closed. I thought I was going back when I left there. I guess a big gesture, they canceled all my leave. I had my leave approved for, had 90 working days coming and had it all approved and everything, and they canceled all leaves. I lost that, and the boss felt sorry for me, so I went out on a patrol boat, stood wheel watch, and stayed in Seattle a few days, and then went over to Idaho. They were building the hatchery at Hagerman, so he said I could go over there and take care of the hauling with the truck and the cat work they had to do there. They figured out some time lapse and time out. I've been up there 3 years. And I never did get those 90 days back. I didn't find 30 of them. Everybody lost that, but I never found anybody else that lost 90.
Yeah. I imagine that all government people can appreciate that. Yeah. Well, while you were there on Kodiak, I know you told quite a few stories about taking the eggs there, and I imagine these guys would be interested in the egg-taking operation. Just exactly how did you go about it, and what was the purpose of taking these eggs?
Well, at the Fognak hatchery, that was mainly a sockeye salmon hatchery. In fact, that was all we did take, other than periodically every other year, they'd take some humpback salmon eggs for a shipment to the state of Washington, because they had every other year was a lean year for them. They were trying to build it up. But Fognak hatchery was entirely sockeye salmon. And they took them out of the tributaries that run into the Hardinack Lake, they wrapped the little streams off inland just a little ways from the shore, and then we'd seen them when they collected below the racks. The sockeye salmon comes up into the lake early in the spring and early summer, then lays in the lake, and then when it gets ready to spawn, goes into the tributary of the lake. That's the only way you'll find a good sockeye setup, is if you have a lake that has tributaries to it. You might find some sockeye, but any stream that has a lot of sockeye, like, well, Parnup Lake is another real good example. It's ideal sockeye, natural spawning. And we did take, I got detailed on that part, on Carlock River, we took steelhead eggs, but they were for shipment to the States too.
Mm-hmm.
I got detailed down there in the spring. That was,
were they pretty good steelhead they were taking out of there?
Oh, yeah. They average anywhere from 18 to 30 pounds.
They were nice steelhead.
Oh, yeah,
steelhead. A lot like the ones we used to get on the Quinault.
Yeah, like they get on the Olympic Peninsula, except inland. Oregon Coast has some of the large steelhead too, but they vary quite a little size. The Colocene on the Hoods Canal were entirely smaller than they are over on the Ho and the Quinault, mm-hmm. and those streams on the Peninsula. Well, it's like the Sacramento River steelhead, they're small.
Yeah.
Why, I don't know, whether it's conditions apparently.
They could be just the race too, they just happen to develop that trait there.
They look like they were in a mingle because the Colocene is far from Quinault, only it's on the inside.
Yeah. They're pretty specific though, and they don't overlap too much apparently.
That holds true with sockeye too. I know a lot of those streams on Kodiak Island, organically, the fishermen all said if they just seen the sockeye, they said, well, that came from organic. They didn't have a big run, but they were entirely larger.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
There's something specific about that breed for that one on the
breed
stream.
Or conditions that environment they had when they was in there. I think that plays the most important
part. Of course, their ocean life should have been approximately the same environment. Yeah.
Similar, unless they had a good spot they went to.
Yeah, it's kind of neat because we really don't know too much about what they do in the ocean yet. I don't know, I've talked with Ron about the San Lorenzo River down there. Their steelhead in there run a little bit bigger than our Sacramento steelhead. And I've always thought it'd be kind of interesting if they could bring out some of those bigger eggs and see if they could improve it. I'm wondering if, you know, lots of times the sizes are just because they're restricted to a certain area, and is it the bigger fish have never been in there. Of course, now the rivers that they were spawning in were pretty good sized rivers, weren't they?
Well, not always. There's some small. They won't have as many, but they don't have runs of fish in.
Like size of Battle Creek? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is about like the San Lorenzo. Maybe the San Lorenzo is a little smaller than Battle Creek.
In fact, that was about second year, I think, I was there. Somebody, we got our mail. Once we had to go to Kodiak, sometimes they didn't do that thing once a month. I'd say, well, when they would make a trip, and they'd pick our mail up down Dogneck. And one of the guys, as they go down there, that little store there too, there was a little pothole back of the town there. In fact, I guess it's more town. They had this big earthquake here, tidal there. And a little ditch running up. He took a couple of buckets of sockeye fry and dumped in there. And it was another, I think it was 3 or 4 years. Well, they'd done that before I got there.
Uh-huh.
The return. Nobody thought anything about it. The natives was all excited there. There was never been any salmon there at all before. There was no salmon right in front of the village here in this little ditch. We don't know about that why.
Is
in
that
fact,
right?
They couldn't get up it.
It was only, what, about a foot wide, maybe?
Yeah.
A couple inches deep?
A little trickle.
And they were running out.
Well, there wouldn't have been spawning area if they'd been in there because it wasn't suitable. They did quite a return, you know, few buckets of fry.
That's amazing they could have located that one little thing again.
Because it never happened again. The natives were really excited to do it.
Well, they claim that the smell power, or the odor location power of a fish is really one of its key features. Well, now, why was the government, why did they have the hatchery there? Just to keep the run up, or were they shipping a lot of these eggs, or both?
No, Not the Sockeye, no, they used to purchase the main engine. Karnak River, they didn't have a hatchery, but they had a conning rig. A lot of when I was there, that's what I took care of, was coming with the lower end after I got to get to it. They allowed so many salmon up to spawn.
Mm-hmm.
When I was there, it was a million Sockeye that were coming to go up. And you regulated that. At that time, there was five fishermen that fish outfits, not fishermen, that got fish off of that area. And I'd get a daily count of what they were catching. And if they were catching off, we weren't getting enough upstream, we had the authority to close them down until we caught up to
caught up with them.
And that worked real successful. They've taken about the same, taken about a million, and we'd let a million up, and that was holding. But since then, they've cut that down a lot on the amount of escapement. In fact, I don't know right now whether they're even doing it. But I know for a long time, after, quite a while afterwards, they cut that down quite a bit. And there was a consequently less number that the cammy were getting to.
Yeah.
And I think personally, they should have maintained it even if they had to close the cammy operations on the earth. Karnak River and Karnak Lake have a lot of spawning area.
Yeah.
Okay. Big lake, the lake's 16 miles long.
Let me click this and we'll put on another one. Okay. We're going? Yeah. I had this friend of mine in this class I just took down there who worked for the state of California. You know, they got some boys up there working. And I know he was mentioning that that they've really cut back the number of fish that they let up.
There's nothing, to me, there's nothing changed on the spawning area in that. You know, it's the same lake, same tributary. If it handled that many then, I don't see why it shouldn't handle it any now.
And the fishing pressure is actually greater for them out
in
the ocean now.
More, yeah, that's right.
So you'd think that you'd...
I always thought that they should have maintained what they had. They claimed it wasn't necessary to have that many spawn in there, but you've got to allow for a lot of other things because all of them go up to spawn. Don't materialize to spawn, for example. There's a takeoff with a bear, which isn't probably large, and then there's some years
silting.
Some years are worse for silting, and you got to allow for this year because you can't say there's so many going up. There's going to be so many from each female. Now you can't do that because one year isn't the same as the other, and there's so many different things that can happen. Maybe the water is up when they spawn, and then it drops. The eggs freeze out.
Yeah.
Well, if you have a lot of them, some of them won't be all at that high level. Some of them will be later, and consequently, you at least have some proceed. And nature allowed that, probably why there were so many in the early days before man interfered with it, because that was to take care of this year. But now they say, well, this salmon's going to produce that many. Well, you can't say that. If conditions are ideal, sure, but if it isn't, well, that's just my own idea.
Well, I think that's pretty much a considered opinion of quite a few people. The only trouble is lobbies have a tendency to get things done that aren't always the most beneficial to the welfare of the animals that are in the stream. I know you've mentioned quite a few times about the nice weather up there, and I guess the weather is pretty mild actually because of the Japanese current.
Temperature wise, it sometimes can get nasty, cold, rain, and then sleet, and then freeze and get icy. But as far as real cold, 5 years I spent there, it got down to zero once. Usually about 20 above would be about. That's still freezing, and hell can be nasty.
I know Ron showed me some pictures. Apparently, they get some good wind up there.
Oh yeah, right? Yeah, and they can blow.
Yeah, he showed cabins held down with cables and stuff like that.
Especially further out on the peninsula, it's even worse. You have to tie lumber down on the dock and never just leave it tied. Even bigger than that. You all tie
them. I don't know, we think these little blows we get down here or something.
Well, it can get nasty, especially in the winter months. Usually, and the summer.
I used to tell me stories about the cannery people and how they used to kind of had some problems with them occasionally, about them going out and getting ptarmigan, was it? And,
they would have lots of packers down in Washington Bay there, that's what I was talking about. kind of oriental hemp that they brought up here. Most of these, they like to put up extra food on their take out. So they scavenge around and get time that much without a season in the summertime when they're having the blue ones in that. They've given me a bad time because I was over in Karnak Lake there. Sometimes I had a boat and skipped down there by the weir, which was below our cabin. And they've taken it a couple times, let it drift, and I wouldn't be happy with that. And I'd see them blasting these ptarmigan with just little babies while all the whole crop was killed. Yeah. And you know, you could go up and hit the thing on the head, actually, you wouldn't even do something. But they blasted these and you would get them pretty heavy on it. And I figured to get some ptarmigan myself in the fall after everything was over, but not like that. So I finally got this guy with it and took the old 30-06 and dropped a few shells close to him. I found that was very bad. And he didn't bother me anymore. I didn't hear the shotgun blast.
Well, how was the Kodiak bear population where you have to? Did you get a chance to hunt those at all?
I didn't spend really a lot of time on them. Shot one back. I didn't look at that one too. Pognac River that comes out of Pognac Lake, you'd always see piles of salmon where they'd throw them out. So I got me a head spotlight and we went down there one night and we got one. And we almost got another one, but he got a little too nervous and put the light on too soon. But actually, I never spent a lot of time on them. They had started a guide service at that time when I was there about the last 2 or 3 years, but they hunted out on Kodiak out and they didn't hunt or any at that time.
Did you have brownies on a fog net too?
Kodiak.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there you go. You'd see some enormous tracks. It was there over Kodiak out at that time. Karnak Lake was a favorite place for them to take their guided hunting trips. It's pretty cool. They may go up the river and on the lake. The lake itself, 60 miles long.
Oh, you could actually take boats up the river then?
If it was shallow. Uh-huh. Some places you'd have to line it on.
Uh-huh.
I've made that trip quite a few times. And the service had biologists that spent the summer up there and you'd take them up there and get them in the
That'd be pretty tough for a biologist to have to go up there and put up with that, I can see.
In a nice little cabin on what we call Dumbbell Island. I don't know if they named it Dumbbell, but there's a biologist in there.
Oh, come on now. No bias there. Well, the lake then, it was pretty fair size. They had both steelhead and sockeye running into it?
Sockeye, a few Chinook.
Mm-hmm.
Very few. Oh, some humpies, yeah, humpies. Mainly sockeye.
Mm-hmm. Let's see that. Did they have grayling in those waters too or no? No grayling there.
Dolly Varden. Dolly Varden. At that time they were eliminating Dolly Varden. In fact, we have pictures here of that.
Yeah, I think you do have a picture of that.
They were doing their steelhead operation. They killed off all of them. I never got paid. They paid 5 cents bounty for it. Or beans, I already worked for the government, I got nothing.
This is because they were supposedly eating up the eggs?
That's true. They followed the salmon up and the steelhead down. Mm-hmm. They eat both ways. And they were big dollies here.
I know, I've seen that picture in there. Oh, here, is this it here?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are good-sized dolly varden. We might include that in there.
Yeah, there's one skip load. Or one seine haul.
Thank golly, those are big, big devils. You did most of your landed your seines with a skiff?
I anchored one end. There were only three of us. And must have been 100 yard net.
Yeah, well, those look like they run, what, 10 pounds?
Some of them weren't getting up. The little ones we used to break their necks, but they get too hard on your wrist, so you throw them in a skiff and then throw them up here till they die, then pitch them back.
That's right.
It's good eagle bait there, bring the eagles.
Well, they're pretty good eating too, aren't they?
Well, I
don't know. See, Dolly Varden is a, it's relatively, it's a char, it's a char, isn't it? It's a,
they're a good deal, like a brook trout, actually.
Like a brookie,
yeah.
Going
brook, you know.
They're pretty close related to what they call the Arctic char. I imagine you must be.
I don't know.
And they're a good sized fish, you can see that. What about deer and stuff on the island? Was there a blacktail?
No deer.
No deer, huh?
They brought two, just one pair in southeastern Alaska. They put on a new town, but I found one of them, and apparently something got the other one too, or died in somebody.
These were blacktail they brought,
Yeah, small blacktail.
Which is, I guess, what they have.
Southeastern Alaska is lousy with.
With the Columbia blacktail.
I've seen them along the beaches in the wintertime when the snow gets bad and food's bad, they get down on the beach. And there's an awful lot of mortality, or wasn't there? It's a tough winter. Southeastern Alaska has an awful lot.
You really didn't have any big carnivores on the island at all, other than the bears, right?
That's right. Bears, and then you had land otter, fox, lots of fox. Weasels, lots of weasels.
This is a,
no rabbits.
A red fox or a gray fox?
Red fox, silver fox, cross. Nope, never saw gray. I don't think there's any red cross.
The normal red population.
And quite a few otter.
No wolves, though.
No wolves. And we did transport some beaver and put them on.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
We were supposed to put those on a fog neck island, but we kind of figured in our own mind that that wasn't so good because they want the salmon to go up these streams, so we put them on a little adjoining island, Raspberry Island, which has a little creek in the lake on it too, in timber. And they may have crossed over because there's just a small strait between that and the fog neck island. So I don't know whether they maybe fog neck island got the beaver now. That was a miserable deal. I don't know. There must have been about 35 of these beaver they sent up there. Cage, some of them had two in a cage. Heavy, the big beaver. They were a wild beaver they had trapped. They used a net to catch them out southeastern Alaska. Then we treat them with a net before they drown. And mean too. We couldn't carry that many because it was heavy. We had to run in with a boat as far as we could. Then we take a box or two. We had a little skiff on the boat. Sometimes we only take one box at a time. We lighted them all ashore. Then we got them all lined up, and we opened them all once, and we tried to herd them up this creek. And that's why they needed sometimes. They was mad because they'd come here a lot. They'd turn on you. So we gazed them up to the creek a little ways, and left them be. I don't know how they materialized.
That was Raspberry Island, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe the boys could check that out and see if they got a big beaver population up there now.
I don't know. And maybe they had elk on several whale islands. You know, these beaver wouldn't have very far unless they didn't like the taste of salt water.
Yeah, which
is because when they tied it out, there's very little water between the two
islands. Yeah, with that many, how big was it? Is Raspberry Island? Is it a mile across?
No.
30 beavers might pretty well overpopulate the whole thing.
On a salmon stream, it's a poor thing to put in. The salmon to go up, and that's what they're interested up there.
What was the reasoning of bringing
them? I don't know. Power beyond that. We just got the orders to move.
Use a little free agency anyway and put them on a different island, that's one thing. Well, I think we've talked about just about everything about these elk and everything. We got the We might run over the pictures once again to make sure we got them identified. See, that your first one here is showing them getting the...
Well, that's just kind of getting the elk acquainted to it. I sure wish I could remember. He was a nice fellow. He was quite helpful. Of course, he was anxious to get him off of his
I would too have to be installed.
He was trying to get him acquainted with the boat and everything, and then we put the little ramp down we used for loading the cat into that scow.
That's number two picture, huh?
Number two.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a picture of when we actually loved him. I was too busy getting them on it. But we went back to Kodiak and got the lumber and stuff and mm-hmm. come back and put it high and dry on high tide load. There was no problem at all. And also have quite an investment in those myself because of this expense. The government never would pay it for all my trips. And had to go and lay overnight in Kodiak and whatnot. They say,
no per diem, huh?
Had no nothing, no expense at all. Said, go and get me a couple of those elk.
Yeah, that would be kind of nice, all right.
Said that had nothing to do with raising station. I was just sent over there. I didn't go alone. They said that was immaterial.
I'm sure the Navy boys can understand that. That's the other, in the number three picture, the boat that's anchored out there is the one you towed the...
Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh. Looks like the old elk really came right off. There's no problem at all.
No problem. I got inside there and they was anxious to get off.
You didn't see sick elk?
I wasn't a rough trip, so I kept bringing them over. Yeah.
It would be bad if you'd had a stampede out there on the briny.
They had signs on there. They couldn't have jumped out.
See, now how many of them were there then? You transferred eight.
Exactly. I found three
more. Then, see, now the fourth picture is they're on the island there.
They're on the island on the beach there. And the other one, they're just going into the timber.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And that's on a park. It didn't take them long to make themselves at home.
I think most animals can survive pretty well with people leave them alone. Well, I think we've covered the elk story pretty good here. And I hope that this is of some use to them and they can make use of this.
Exact year, I'm not too sure. I think it was about 1930. I never did mark it down. I never kept them down.
Well, I think I'm sorry I didn't bring those maps up that Ron has. It shows a lot of this stuff really well, and I know this friend of his. I forgot what your name is when you hear this, but anyway, I know he does a lot of fishing and stuff off these islands out there and knows them pretty well. Well, I guess we can kind of turn this thing off now. We've spent quite a bit of time.